Well, it's really great having the chance to talk to you because I'm almost through with Points of Light. I'm at the point where your heroine, I have a difficulty with names.
Allie
has just met Rebecca's husband.
Right.
And I think, of course, she's still feeling very bad about the death of Jamie. And Rebecca's husband puts his arms around her, and her husband comes in. It's kind of an awkward situation. So I can see in a way where this is leading in terms of Allie's grief and everything. So I'll talk about Points of Light in just a moment, kind of lead up to it. But I think I got a little confused. You had a novel last year, didn't you?
No, it was probably this was published in January.
Uh-huh.
And probably three years ago, I had a novel, Mirror Images. And then 3 years before that, maybe 3 years before that, another novel, Rituals. So this is my third novel.
So this came out in January.
Right, this last January, January 88.
Then apparently, Mirror Images was the more autobiographical novel that dealt a lot with your mother. Is that correct? Or was that?
Well, I wouldn't say I think everything you write is autobiographical in a sense, at least emotionally so, because if you're the kind of writer I am, you write about the things you care about, feel deeply about, and know about, but they aren't necessarily factually autobiographical. This book is about the death of a child, but I don't have a child who died. I felt it was an emotional subject that I could really tap into my own feelings for my own children and use that to create a dramatic situation which would be emotional and moving. Mirror Images is about a younger girl, a daughter, who has a very, very close, intense, and probably sick relationship with her mother. And I had a very close, intense relationship with my mother, but I didn't live in New York City. My mother wasn't a soap opera actress. And the events that transpire in Mirror Images didn't exactly happen to me, but I know what it feels like to be involved in that kind of a very intense, destructive relationship.
Now, you grew up in or near Boston, is that correct?
Right, that's right, just outside of Boston. I grew up, yeah, and I went to school in Boston, so I was there until I moved to New York about 5 years ago.
Now, how big a fan? Do you have sisters?
I have one sister, a younger sister. Mm-hmm.
What? Tell me a little bit, Christian. Your mother became an extremely prominent poet and a troubled person. What was it like growing up as the daughter of Anne Sexton?
Well, when I was younger, it was difficult because her illness really intruded on the family so much of the time. It was very difficult. Her art also intruded, but her art was something that was more positive. I mean, the poetry really kept her alive for a lot of years because it was a place she could go to in her mind where she could be creative and productive instead of being sick and destructive. And she wrote a lot of the things she felt about being mentally ill came out into the poetry. So it was hard to be a child in the family where the mother was such a troubled person. On the other hand, it was also a privilege in that she was a very gifted woman, and a lot of being around someone who is that gifted enables you to absorb, to some extent, the aura of the gift. And I think I learned a great deal from her. That's why this book is dedicated to her. I think she taught me a lot about listening to language and a lot about how you work at something and how long you may have to work at it. She was a good example in terms of really watching how someone would revise again and again and again until it was just right. The kind of artistic tenacity you have to really, to make something good. It takes a long time. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. So she was a good example in that way. So it was difficult and it was blessed all at the same time.
Your mother and father were divorced?
Yeah, when I was in college. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your sister. Does she have these artistic gifts
No,
as well?
She doesn't seem to. She retreated into a more normal lifestyle, I think, sometimes. She's a nurse. She still lives in the Boston area. And she seems to, you know, spend most of her time gardening and with her husband and taking care of her patients. So she doesn't seem to have followed in the family tradition this particular way.
Your mother won the Pulitzer.
Right, 67.
And I understand, I read somewhere that many of the poems that were written for that book, what was the name of the book?
Live or Die.
Were written in a burst of energy, is that correct?
Well, she almost always worked in a burst of energy. That's very interesting. I tend to work more 9 to 5. But, of course, the novels are a different form than poetry. Points of Light took me 4 years to write, working 9 to 5, 5 days a week. My mother might not write anything for a month, and then she would be furiously sitting at her typewriter from 6 in the morning until midnight, you know. So it's two different kinds of things.
I have a feeling she was writing, even when she wasn't at the typewriter.
Well, that may well be. That may
well
be. But
isn't that true, though? There is a period where you think about and plan, in a way, conceptualize what you want to say, even before you sit down at the typewriter.
Well, for sure. I don't mean to say that when I'm writing 9 to 5, I'm sitting there at my word processor writing every minute, because a lot of the time you're reading or you're thinking or you're planning or you're plotting or you're just daydreaming. All those things go into making up what you're going to write. A novel is such a long form, you have to be able to really put in a considerable amount of time. A poem is more finite. And you may have a beginning, a middle, and an end much, much sooner, or you may put it aside and come back to it 3 months later and find what you're really trying to write about. A novel takes several years. Sometimes I started working on this and I had a totally different ending, and my editor over time convinced me it was not the right ending, so 2 years later this book turned into a totally different book. The creative process is so variable, you know, and each book is different. You know, some books you have an outline for, other books you don't. Then you wish you had an outline as you're, you know, going through the forest of these words, saying, oh, I got off the track here somewhere. Where did it go? You know, so each thing has its own momentum, I think.
Do you remember that day in your household when it was announced that your mother won the Pulitzer?
Sure.
Tell me about that.
It was
that.
A big deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I think we
were sitting in you didn't turn over and go back to sleep.
No, we did not. I think it was the middle of the afternoon, in fact. We were just sitting around, and the phone rang. And I don't remember being aware, although I'm sure, in fact, my mother was very aware, you know, that she'd been not, she certainly must have known that she was up for it in some way or another. And I don't remember anything about that because I must have been 11 or 12. But I remember her expression, her surprise. She was dancing around the house. There was champagne. There was great celebration. It was really very thrilling. It was a good moment to remember.
Oh, I bet it was. Your mother died what year?
74.
Now, after your mother's death, I noticed, I brought these books because I see that your mother had a lot of poems that apparently were in her office, and you rescued and
right.
put them together in these books. And in effect, you became the executor of your mother's literary estate, didn't you?
That's right. Well, she actually appointed me before she died, so it was something I knew I was going to have to deal with. I don't think I really knew how difficult it would be to deal with emotionally, but I had to go through the various unpublished poems and decide which ones would make for good material. So we winnowed through.
But there was more than the poems, too.
We did a book of letters as well. I think at that time there was a desire for something more biographical because people wanted to know about her life right after she died. And, of course, it was much too soon to really do a biography. So I compiled the book of letters as a way of answering that need using her letters. And all of this really introduced me. It was a good foothold for me into the writing world. It enabled me to get an opportunity to meet publishers and to begin working. I was right out of college. It was the year after my mother had died, and I just graduated. And it gave me a chance to really begin working on, I was working my own poetry at the time and doing the letters on the side. And then I realized that I would really never be able to get out from under her shadow if I did not find some kind of writing that was more my own. So I did a book of nonfiction after I finished the letters about young women and the choices they were making between career and marriage, and that was great, and I had a good time doing it. But I really wanted to do something more creative. Nonfiction wasn't the thing that I really wanted to do. It wasn't the kind of writing I really wanted to do. So I decided that a novel was the obvious next step, and Rituals really, in a way, almost wrote itself. It was about a young woman dealing with her mother's death and trying to come into her own and a struggle with alcoholism. And it was a book that came very much out of my heart at the time. And when I say it wrote itself, I don't mean there wasn't a lot of revision and work involved, but it just felt very natural at the time to write. And then I went on from there. I think that this book is different than the other books. Points of Light is different in that it, instead of talking about mother-child relationships from the point of view of the daughter, which both Mirror Images and Rituals do, for the first time I'm writing from the point of view of the mother. And I think that's a byproduct of the fact that my life has changed. I'm now a mother. I have two young sons. And I was in a place to begin writing from the adult point of view. And that's partly why I think I could afford to dedicate this book to my mother. I felt like I've come into my own. I'm on secure ground now, safe footing. I know where I am and what I'm doing. I'm very proud of the book. I feel like it's the best thing I've ever done. And I could say, this book's for you, Mom, because she taught me so much.
Yeah, I imagine that is a wonderful feeling. Did I hear you correctly that you did did write poetry?
Yes, I did for many years. In fact, we used to sit together in the afternoons and workshop her poems and mine. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the good things to think about from my past.
It's a good thing, but also it's a long shadow, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why I say a real long shadow, and I wasn't willing to deal with that every day. Also, I think you have to find your own voice and your own gift. And I think, looking back on it now, sometimes I still would like to work in the poetic form, but I really feel that I have a gift for telling stories and for making people care about characters. And you can't do that very easily in a poem. So I feel very good about where I've come to right now.
Now, you've set Points of Light on a farm. Is it Vermont?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
You're thinking
mix
Vermont.
Those places
no,
up.
It's because they're making the movie in Vermont this summer. I think that's why you're...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Sam Shepard's going to play Sam.
Well, wouldn't that be great? I think it would be.
I just saw Sam Shepard as Sam.
I did too.
Not just the name.
I know. Well, it's funny because when you're writing a book, you don't... People say, oh, well, who would you imagine to play this if they were going to make a movie? Who would play Allie? Who would play Sam? While you're writing... Or while I'm writing, I never think about who would play the role in a movie if I were ever so lucky as to have a movie made. But with this, so when people ask me this question about this book after, about Points of Light after it was finished, I would think about it, and then I would say, oh, gee, you know, actually Sam Shepard would be terrific. Even though I hadn't thought of it when I was writing, he would be just perfect. And then when the movie rights were bought, people started joking around about wouldn't it be great if it were Sam Shepard. So, I don't know. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Have they cast the
I don't think they've cast the male role. Marlo Thomas is going to play the female lead.
Marlo Thomas?
Yeah. She bought the rights for herself. I think they'll rewrite it so that, it's for a slightly...
I'm having trouble visualizing.
Well, it's because Marlo Thomas is dark and Allie is blonde, you know, so you're thinking to yourself, well, she won't look like Allie, but she's really very gifted. If you've seen Nobody's Child, the TV movie she made, she won an Emmy for that, and I think she's terrific. I think she's got the emotional range to play the part. You haven't gotten to the part where Allie comes unglued yet, so you have a treat in store. I think the role deserves an actress... who has or needs an actress who has a lot of versatility and ability to really play and make us believe that she's seeing what she sees.
Now, you've set this on a farm, and there are some vivid images that you've written about, for example, the slaughter of the chickens, for example.
Right.
And, of course, Allie says, we've got to send these chickens out from now on.
Wouldn't you?
That's kind of funny, but it's also a very bloody scene. But you must have had some farm background.
You're right, I did. You're right,
maybe a week or so, grandma's house or something. I don't know.
No, I spent, when I was young, I spent my summers on a farm that was also a camp of 12 girls. It was a horse farm, and the campers basically ran the stable. And we had a lot of different tasks. One of them was slaughtering chickens. One of them was mucking out the stalls, all this sort of thing. And it was from that I drew my experiences, that I drew the information off my own experiences. A lot of it I had to research, though, like how many chickens you needed if you were going to eat some of them and have some of them lay eggs and things like that. So, you know, there was some research as well. But in terms of the actual experiences, that came out of my summers in a small New Hampshire town.
Now, Allie is an artist, and Tell me a little bit about this and how you developed this character, and tell me about your knowledge of the art world.
My knowledge of the art world we could put inside a thimble. I know virtually nothing. I did a lot of research into painting itself, because how can you write a novel about a painter and have her painting paintings if you don't know something about it? So I did a lot of reading. And apart from that, everything else was just sort of instinct. People say to me, oh, you must be a closet painter. Let us see your paintings. And I say, I don't paint. And they say, well, how did you write about it so well? That was the best part, was being able to write. I guess maybe I've always had some sort of unconscious fantasy that I would someday paint, because I just cannot tell you what pleasure it was to sit there writing. Painting through writing is better than painting by the numbers. You know, all I had to do was sit there and describe it. I didn't have to do any of the work of painting it, but I felt like I was painting it because I was painting it with words. So that was one of those things that was basically just research and instinct.
Well, didn't you say your mother painted?
Well, my mother spent a little time sort of painting trays, and she did, you know, sort of occupational therapy stuff. And there was a little space of time where she did some work with oils and stuff, still lifes and stuff like that, but not really. It was just a very small amount of time. She wasn't really, I wouldn't say, a painter. But we do have a few things left over from those years that we put in with the archive down in University of Texas. They have some of them, 3 or 4 different canvases. But basically, that part was purely imagined.
We talked a moment ago about the creative process, and actually the mystery of the creative process. But when you began Points of Light, subjects don't come out of thin air. You mentioned that you are now a mother, and you are writing from a mother's perspective, and this, of course, is a story of the death of a child. But you just don't sit at a typewriter and begin knocking this stuff out. And indeed, the book was revised a couple of times during the editing process. But you have to have an idea. I mean, how does this come about exactly? Some people say, well, there's a blank piece of paper. How do you put anything on it? I don't have anything to say.
Right. Well, it's probably different. I'm sure it's very different for every writer. So for me, about the time that I'm finishing one book, I begin to feel strongly and imagine strongly an aspect of a story I might want to tell. So with this book, as I was finishing Mirror Images, I had by then become a mother, having lost several pregnancies, having gone through losing several, I felt like losing several children to me, and gone through the grief and the pain of that, and I finally had my first child. I had to go to bed for 9 months to have him, and he was very precious to me. And I was obsessed with the idea that he might die. I just worried about it all the time. I dreamt about it. I mean, I had spent 9 months in bed making sure that he didn't die before he got born. And once he was born, I thought I would stop worrying about it. But in fact, I didn't stop worrying about it. Maybe I even worried about it more. So I began to think. I took a course called Baby Life, which teaches you how to childproof your home and cut all the strings off the pull toys in your house and feed your kid tapioca and strained prunes till he's about 3 and so he won't choke on anything. All this, some of it very commonsensical and some of it a bit neurotic advice.
That's the first child.
This was with the first child.
The second child, things calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, the second child, things calmed down. But you were talking about the genesis of the idea. Yeah. You asked me, how did it begin? And this is how it began, out of the middle of my neurotic fear that Alexander was going to die in the middle of the night. And you remember that scene in Terms of Endearment where Shirley MacLaine practically gets into bed with her daughter. I mean, the daughter is like, you know, a 2-month-old infant in the crib, and she's in her high heels, and she like climbs into the crib to make sure the child is still breathing. Well, I used to go in every night, but I think almost every parent does that. You put your hand on their back. Is it still going up and down? So I was concerned, and out of that concern, I thought to myself, what if? And that's the beginning of everything for me. It's a question that starts out, what if? What if he died? Could I go on? Could I live through it? Would I die too? Would I kill myself? What would I do? How could I bear this? The pain would be too impossible. I could stand losing my husband. I know I will lose my other parents someday. I've already lost my mother. You expect to lose your husband and your parents. But a child is the future. maybe a child is everything you hope for yourself in some ways. A child is everything you hope for that didn't happen to you. You project so many things onto a child. I just couldn't deal with the idea that something might happen to him. And so I said, what if? And out of that what if, I began to spin a story. What if I had a child who died, and how would I deal with it, and would I make it through? And that's what the book is about. Will Allie make it through? Will she find some sort of inner reserve within herself to push back the craziness that comes out of that kind of a loss? And that's how the story started. By the time I got to writing it, instead of just outlining it and feeling my way through it, my second child was just born. I started writing right after my second child was born. So the process began as Alexander was young and an infant, and then I began writing it when Nicholas was born, because I had my children very close together. So
you didn't spend 9 months in bed?
No, I didn't have to do anything with Nicholas. It was great.
why were you in bed for 9 months? Was this as a result of the earlier miscarriages?
Or? Well, I had the earlier miscarriages, but my mother took this drug called DES, which has given the subsequent generation of daughters a lot of difficulties in getting pregnant and in keeping their pregnancies. And they were desperate. I'd lost three in a row, and they said, so go to bed. Lie on your back for 9 months and don't move. So that's what I did. And I was just, I had a totally normal pregnancy. There were no problems at all. And so with the second one, I couldn't have gone to bed even if I wanted to, because I had a very active one-year-old child when I got pregnant, and I just stayed on my feet, and it was fine. Nikki was just fine too, so it worked out.
How old are your boys?
5 and 3 3/4, or so, roughly.
That takes a lot of work.
It sure does.
Is it at your word processor, a typewriter? You got two young, active kids. How do you juggle the two careers?
I have a terrific au pair girl who helps. Couldn't live without this girl. It's better now, too, because they're in school part of the day, and I do have some help at home. I just go in every morning at 9 o'clock and shut the door and sit down, and that's it. And if I don't discipline myself to do it every day, then I never get anything done. So it also makes me feel grounded and productive and like my... you know, I have a reason to be here. And I end up being able to give a lot more to the kids because of it. At one time, I was also writing for the soap operas, and the three things combined were like, I was up till midnight every night. That was kind of crazy, but that was also a good experience for me. And it helped sort of tide me over some of the tight financial periods while I was writing this book. And also, it just is good for your ego to do different things at different times. Sometimes gives you better perspective.
What does your husband do?
He works for a big investment bank and does, he's a venture capitalist. He raises money for new medical technologies and healthcare stuff.
Ooh, that sounds important.
Well,
you're just a writer.
Right, I'm just a writer. Also, he's a writer. Well, he was. In 82, he got himself onto the bestseller list with a trade paperback, and I was ready to kill him. You know, here I am struggling away on my third book, and he writes one book, and up it goes onto the list.
What did he write about?
He wrote the official MBA handbook, or How to Succeed in Business Without a Harvard MBA. You might have seen it. Anyway, it was sort of a value-added, humorous handbook on, you know, business. It's a business book. But it did very well. Everybody loved it and thought it was hilarious. And they got on the Today Show and they invented a drink. They did all this different stuff. It was great. But it wasn't great for, it was great from my point of view, but I must admit I was a little jealous. All that
you wanted
success.
To be first, at least.
Right, right.
Well, what are his feelings now that you've had three novels behind you?
Well, I think he's a little jealous. He's probably a novelist, a secret novelist at heart. I think he'd love nothing better than to retire and sit there all day. He thinks that. I tell him, you know, you think it just looks easy sitting there all day, but I'm telling you, it's not. It can be very, you know, you have a hard day, you can't think of how you want to say it or what you want to say, or you get snarled up, or you can't see your way clear around some plot problem you're having, or this character isn't behaving the way you thought they were going to, and it can be very depressing. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of technical work involved in writing, and not just scrawling out a manuscript.
Oh, no, for sure. I frankly feel more comfortable with the technical work. It's the inspirational work that makes me nervous. It's sitting there with a blank page that's although I don't have a page anymore, a blank screen that makes it makes me the most nervous. That's the hardest part. Once I have something down and I can start pushing it around, I feel a lot more comfortable.
What do you write on?
A word processor.
What kind of
machine
do you
use? It's
hear?
It's an IBM something or other.
Do you ever have these moments when you're afraid you're going to lose a whole chapter?
Well, I've had those moments where I've lost all, but I back everything up at the end of the day, and I also print out a hard copy so that the worst that could happen.
Supposed to save as you go.
Yeah, I do. I'm very neurotic about it because I'm terrified I'm going to lose something. And for the most part, I also have a great machine now that with a hard disk and stuff so that it doesn't... There was a time where you used just floppies when these things were more elementary or basic, and it was a lot easier to lose things. Now, I haven't had any trouble with my new machine, but who knows?
I was reading an article in the paper, I guess the Tuesday edition of the Times, where they have the science section, and there was an article about backups and things, and the motto is save early and save often.
Yeah, it's true. Your manual, in fact, uses those words. It tells you to save early and save often. But it's hard to discipline yourself. You're on a roll. You've written 10 pages, and you're in the midst of it. You don't want to stop. You don't stop to think, oh, I better stop and save. But really, unless you lose your power or something.
But IBM, I believe there are programs that have automatic save programs.
Oh, really?
So if you look into it, I'm sure there are. Yeah. There's one I know of. I use a Macintosh, and there's something called Savior. And it saves every, you can set it, it can save every page, or
you can set it
every couple of minutes.
That's a great idea. See, the thing should remember, you come to do a radio show.
Well, you don't have to remind yourself to do it.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, I don't have that program.
Oh, well, then so it does you a lot of good, right?
I have to go up and hit save, or hit the key and hit save, but that's not, the machines are pretty reliable.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I'm saying. When I was using the floppies, because you put them in and out every day. I mean, there was so much that could just happen to the actual floppy itself. That's where I would have my problems, unless the power went out. If the power goes out and you haven't saved, you lose what's on the screen. I lost the power once in a hurricane, I think. That was it.
You were writing in a hurricane?
I was writing in the middle of it. Remember that hurricane we had here a couple years ago? I said, what the hell. Went right on typing.
But we don't have real hurricanes up here.
We did have a real hurricane about 3 years ago. Don't you remember?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I live in Manhattan.
Hurricane.
We don't know.
Wait, you don't have?
Like
oh,
that.
Well. What can I say? All the glass towers.
Well, I did. I have a surge suppressor, but I remember one night it was lightning and there was thunder outside, and I got scared. I thought, what if something happened? So I shut off the machine.
Well, I was probably smart. God only knows.
I'd keep one floppy in the refrigerator.
Oh.
Somebody gave me that tip, you know.
Because it de-static.
No.
Keeps it
just
better?
If the house burns down.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Refrigerator usually doesn't get burned up.
Right, right. That makes sense. I didn't think of that.
But I guess
if the house
these,
burns down, I'll definitely be in trouble.
But these word processors have really been a wonderful thing.
Well, there's a big controversy about them, you know. There are a lot of people who say, I mean, the Times seems to run a piece on word processor, yay or nay, every couple months. You read some writer saying, no, they're terrible, and then another writer saying, yes, they're great. Because some people maintain that people using word processors don't revise enough, and I really object. I don't think that's true at all. I think you revise 500 times more. And there's any doubt about it.
Because a person is using a typewriter and a piece of paper. The ordeal of having to either use whiteout or type over the whole page cut and use scissors and all that stuff, you tend not to want to do it.
I know. It's true. So even though you know you should, you tend to. And also, it just, as you're writing it, the only thing I regret is as I'm writing, if I'm writing and revising at the same time, you do lose the revisions because you wipe out this sentence and put in another sentence, then it's gone. And you're not going to, you can't save at the same time that you're revising in that sense if you're revising and writing at the same time. And I like having a total record of everything I thought of because a lot of times you think of something, you decide, nah, I don't want it, you take it out, and then 2 days later you wish you had it, you wish you could go back.
Well, there are ways around that.
I don't know.
You'd
have to store after everything you did. Because sometimes you might change it 3 times in a row. You might sit there and say, okay, well, I want this word here. So you put it in, and then you take it out, and then it's gone. You're not going to save it as you do those
kinds
of
things. I was talking to James Zickey a while back.
Yeah, what does he use?
What's that?
What does he use?
typewriters.
Yeah.
He has a typewriter in every room.
Oh, God.
And the reason he does, he buys typewriters all the time, and he's a nut about it. The reason he has them in every room, he has so many different projects going.
Oh.
He'll have a novel in one typewriter, and he'll have a poem in another, maybe another poem, an essay in another, a children's book in another.
God.
And so he'll go from room to room, and he'll type. So I had suggested that he get a word processor. He's absolutely against it because he likes to see, when he's writing a poem, he likes to see each individual
draft.
Revision.
Right.
Side by side by side by side.
Right.
And I told him he could do it.
Yeah, you just have to print it out.
All you have to do is save
time.
Each revision.
Right.
And then print it out if you want or keep it on disk.
Right.
It could be revision one,
right.
Poem one, revision one, right. Poem one.
Well, I don't know.
Two.
I think some people just have, you know.
But then he said, but there's another reason. He says, I would have to learn how to use a word processor.
That's right. See? I think people have mental blocks about the idea of using a computer. When my husband suggested it, we got the first one, we got a Xerox right before I started writing Mirror Images. And I just didn't want to do it, but I forced myself to learn how. Once I understood, it only took me about 3 days, once I understood how it worked, it was clear to me this thing was going to save my life, you know, and it did. It's been terrific. And with this book, too, I wrote this one as well on the Xerox. The one I'm working on now, I'm using the IBM for, a new book that I'm working on now. So I just think they're terrific.